This is Word Radio.
Hi, this is Matt Jolly. Aviate timepieces honor both the aircraft and the untold story of the airman. Check out the awesome lineup of Aviate timepieces by visiting avi-8.co.uk. That's avi-8.co.uk. Choose from six popular themes, including the Harrier. They're all there waiting for you at avi-8.co.uk.
You're strapped in to Woodbury Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Welcome to the Wings Over New Zealand live show for May 2017. I'm your host, Dave Homewood, coming to you from a cold, wet and miserable Cambridge in New Zealand. My co-host, Grant, was unable to make it to this show live this month, once again, unfortunately, because of his commitments. But he and I actually recorded a pre-recorded segment on Saturday that's just gone. So just before we get to our live guest, Bevan Dews, who's coming up fairly soon. I'd like to ask Matt if he can play the clip with myself and Grant talking about the news from down under.
Well, I would be happy to, but we've had a technical difficulty. As soon as you said that, I don't know what happened. It literally just blacked out over there. So, good thing Bevan's waiting around.
We'll bring
around.
Bevan on and see if we can
how did that happen?
Sort that out. Well, welcome to the show, Bevan. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dave. And how about yourself?
Yeah, good, good. A little bit flustered now.
But, that's all part of the fun. Nothing.
Oh, it is, yeah. This is live radio. You're coming to us live from the Vintage Aviator Hangar at Masterton, aren't you?
I sure am. I've got a fantastic studio today.
Yeah, boy, gosh, yes. I mean, how many aircraft are in that hangar right now?
I think there's 23, and I'm just walking past a line of four BE2s, Newport, Avro 504, and a few other pretty amazing airplanes.
That's incredible. I mean, that is pretty amazing. It's one of the most special places on the planet to go and visit Masterton and see that collection. It's the Vintage Aviator Collection, famously owned by Sir Peter Jackson, the famous movie director, Hobbit and King Kong and all of those great films. And, of course, you're one of the pilots in the for the collection, one of the volunteer pilots who gets to fly some of these aircraft. And so what are you rated on now from the collection?
So one of the lucky few. The first airplane I flew was the Fowls. So that was about 4 years ago now. Yep. Been flying the Fock triplane a lot lately. Also the BE2s. So I've flown all five of our different BE2s now, including one of the E's that we sent to the UK.
And one of those is a genuine one, isn't it?
So the BE2F, which was the first one that I flew, that's original and it's the only one left in existence. So
I mean, that's
just a little
cool.
Bit rare.
That is pretty amazing. And, for anyone who doesn't know the collection, most of the aircraft are reproductions that the Vintage Aviator has made themselves, and they're done to exacting standards. They're just like the original thing. But then there are some originals as well, some real genuine World War I aircraft in there.
Yeah, so it's pretty amazing. Like, just walking through the hangar, you would hardly know the difference between one of the original airplanes and the reproductions. They are literally exactly as they were during World War I. So very, very lucky to be able to compare or go out and do dogfights. We've got, at the moment, we've got four airworthy Albatross here with Mercedes engines, and we can go out have a dogfight between them and our three SF5s that we've got. So you can replicate the battles from World War One. It's pretty amazing, really.
That's actually just what you've just said there. We've got four Albatross. I mean, honestly, a few years ago, no one in the world could have said that.
No one in the world can still say that apart from us. I mean, before the Vintage Aviator started, it really has just brought the history back to life. and recreated history that was lost. Like up until we got our bombers, the FE-2Bs, there were none in existence, and right. Now we've got the only two flying ones in the world.
Wow, the amount of work that must go into rebuilding these things too. Like the Albatross is kind of like the Mosquito in terms of a wooden fuselage that's made over a mold, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm not too sure exactly what the process was that they used to get all the drawings for that, but I don't think any of them actually existed. They had to go and copy the aeroplane that's in the War Memorial in Canberra in Australia.
Right.
And pretty much reverse engineer the aeroplane. But, yeah, I have to talk to Gene about the full detail on how they did that.
Yeah, and of course we hope to ask Gene to come on to the show, but he's busy today because they've got some other things going on down there at Masterton as well, so, which I don't know if you can actually talk about. But
I can talk briefly about it. We've just got we've got a bit of filming going on in the next couple of weeks, so I've got a few aeroplanes involved in that. I just had a very brief chat with the director of it, and the filming is not quite what I said to you, Dave. It's actually for a museum in France, but it's actually an Australian museum. It's not the Kiwi one.
Okay, right.
So I'm not too sure on the full details, but we'll be doing some flying for that over the next few weeks, which is always great fun.
I have a question. I have a question here, Dave. I wanted to ask him this. Bevan, how many movies have you flown in at this point yet?
This will be the first one that I've flown, and I've been involved with a couple of others in the past, but only as ground support. I haven't flown in any yet, so this will be the first one, hopefully.
Will this allow you to enter the Screen Actors Guild as a movie pilot at some point? Well, I'm serious. I mean,
you'll get an IMDb page.
Yeah, you could. I mean, you'll be just like Steve Hinton, only the younger Kiwi version.
Yeah, well, you never know.
I mean, what kind of...
I love that modesty.
Yeah. I mean, Dave, just think of the opportunities this young man is going to have. I mean, that's just awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I just got to just keep on chugging along and keep on helping out, and hopefully the doors will open.
Before long, you'll forget what beekeeping even is.
Yeah, I need to keep doing that to pay the aviation bills.
Well, Matt, you sent a message saying that you've got that segment ready to go.
I do.
Now,
are you
so
ready?
Should we
to
listen
hear
to it?
It
and then come back to Bevan afterwards?
Sure, whatever you want, Dave. Your show.
Okay, well, let's go to the news segment and then we'll come back to Bevan afterwards. Well, welcome to the show, Grant.
Hey, thanks, mate. It's great to be back on.
Yeah, it's been a wee while. It's good to have you back. Yeah. And obviously we're recording this on the Saturday before our live show because you're not going to be on with us live, but this is as close as we'll get.
Yeah, sorry, mate. A CASA audit in Sydney is going to make it very hard for me to be part of the show, unfortunately.
Yeah, no worries. Well, we'll just crack into the news. A really interesting centenary that's just come up a couple of weeks ago on the 7th of May. Wigram Air Force Base, as it used to be, celebrated 100 years of the first military flight on the base. And Wigram is the home of military aviation. It was originally, 100 years ago, it was the Canterbury Aviation Company's airfield, owned by Sir Henry Wigram, and they were training World War I pilots. And the first flight was made on the 7th of May, 1917, by Cecil Hill in a Caudron G3. So... yeah, that's quite a big one for New Zealand military aviation. It's no longer a base there now, but it's all houses, unfortunately. But the museum is still based there, and they've got a bit of land there. So we still have that connection to the history.
Yeah, which is great. You've got to keep that. In Australia, they've been trying to close the Point Cook airfield, which is the RAF base Point Cook, now home of the museum there. But it's the oldest continually operating military airfield in the world. So there's a bunch of us fighting to keep that open, but they've shut down Laverton to the north and turned that into housing. So I feel your pain there, mate.
Right, right. Yeah, they've got to keep Point Cook open. It's a great place.
Oh, yeah.
Another piece of military news here, Number 3 Squadron and Number 5 Squadron RNZF have both recently been given certificates of achievement by the New Zealand Search and Rescue Council for rescues that they did last year, which is great. Congratulations to both squadrons.
Yeah, that's good to see them getting some recognition for the valuable life-saving work they do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And as we know from previous interviews with the guys on Fire Squadron, they do a lot of rescues out at sea, way up into the Pacific, and are quite often lucky in finding people in lost in little dinghies in the middle of nowhere, so they're bloody good.
Yep.
We've had some sad news too this past week. There's been a few deaths here in New Zealand. Probably the big one for me would be Robin Reed, wife of Bill Reed. They own the Anson together, the Everett Anson Mark I. Robin was an absolutely lovely lady, smashing lady, and unfortunately she's had a long battle with cancer and passed away 2 days ago on Thursday. So yeah, we'll miss her very much.
Yeah.
Rest in peace to Robin. And news that's just come out this morning, Saturday morning, Squadron Leader Sandy Curry has also passed away. He was the technical officer who started the Royal New Zealand Air Force Museum. He was basically the guy that collected together all the aircraft and restored them and put them on display and saved our heritage for the what's now the Air Force Museum of New Zealand at Wigram. And, you know, he did so much for our heritage, an incredible man and much respected officer as well. So he'll be much missed as well.
Yeah, that's sad news.
Yeah. And also one of our forum members from the Wings Over New Zealand forum passed away this week, Ian Warren, who was a well-known aviation artist. And he did a lot of the skins or artworks for the flight simulator aircraft and was well known in that field as well, and quite a contributor to the forum. So we'll miss Ian. Rest in peace.
Well, that's your trio, you know, things happen in threes, right?
Yeah, well, that's right, but we've got a fourth one here. Condolences must go to the team at Pioneer Aero because they recently lost their lovely hangar cat, Curtis. We only talked about Curtis on two shows ago on the live show with Paul, and unfortunately he got ill and he's passed away, so he'll be much missed as well. He was well known at Ardmore for his antics and the fact that he would quite happily sleep right next to where, you know, lots of engineering was going on. He was quite a cool cat.
Yeah, I suspect a little deaf by the end. But
yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but okay, yeah. Well, there's the fourth then. There goes the rule of threes.
Yeah, yeah. On a lighter note, you've recently been at an air show.
Ah, you could say that. Yeah, I was joining Ando doing commentary at the Wings Over Illawarra air show, which recently ran here in it was at Wollongong, just south of Sydney, and we had Pete Anderson, aka Ando, myself, and Steve Vischer, my co-host in Playing Crazy Down Under, and we were the commentary team and making things happen, and it was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed ourselves. It was great to see Trapo Flyers CA-27 Sabre on both days. Absolutely beautiful aircraft. It's the Australian variant of the F-86 Sabre. Yep. It's re-engined with a Rolls-Royce Avon engine, which gave it much better power, made it a lot faster, and it's got bigger armament, big cannons installed on it. So a beautiful aircraft, absolutely spectacular to see flying, and I'm looking forward to the day when the RAAF, their heritage Sabre, is back flying again once they resolve that issue with the Martin Baker ejection seat and we can see two Sabres flying alongside, which would be wonderful. That's something to dream of. And who knows, we may even be able to see that in October 2018 at Warbirds Down Under, where a couple of other aircraft who were due to fly but didn't, the Hurricane went unserviceable and couldn't make it to Illawarra. So unfortunately, we didn't see the Hawker Hurricane flying. And Steadfast was still not out of its crate and returned to the air after you guys stole it over to New Zealand to fly at Omaka. So I was a little upset about that because I love watching Steadfast do its thing. Very, very powerful. That's the Yak-3U. It's got about 2,000 horsepower radial on the front of it, which is really scary. But something that did fly, it couldn't fly on the Saturday. It had brake problems. The guys from Hazair and Aubrey, where they helped get it back in the air, they turned up over in the afternoon with a whole stack of different brake parts, and they got it sorted out. I saw it being worked on in the hangar in the evening, and they just finished the work, so we knew it would fly the next day, and that's the Focke-Wulf 190. Now, it's a 10% Focke-Wulf, 90% Flugwerk. The majority of the aircraft is actually the Flugwerk replica, but absolutely beautiful-looking aircraft, sounds fantastic, and it really made everyone's day to see it flying on Sunday. That was its public debut.
Yeah, well, that's pretty neat. I did see that aircraft when I was over in Australia in 2015, and of course I've seen the Flugwerk 190 here as well, that is based at Amaka. I've seen that fly and be displayed, and they're great to see. They are replicas, but they're very representative of the original fighters. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, well, at least this one is about 10% true, which is, it puts it slightly ahead of some of the data plate restoration Spitfires that are out there, where the only original thing is the data plate. Beautiful to see flying. We didn't get to see a boomerang flying, unfortunately. We did see Trapo's Mustang. We did see the Tamora guys brought down their Spitfire. DC was flying that one. And, the boomerang I would have liked to have seen just more to hear, actually, because it's got a beautiful, beautiful sound. It's got a supercharger whine, but then also the wind over the gun ports. As you can recall, Dave, it's got an incredible sound, very distinctive.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's two of those flying in Australia. There's the Tamora one, and Jim Wally's got one in South Australia. Seen that one just recently when I was doing commentary at the Barossa Air Show. That was just a fantastic aircraft watching to fly. And the fun news is there's at least 7 or 8 aircraft that will be are being restored at the moment here in Australia and will be flying again. So the boomerang is coming back, mate.
Great. We recently also had the Classic Fighters air show at Amaka, and that was brilliant. Three Spitfires flying together again, and of course within the three Spitfires we had Frank Parker and Liz Needham, husband and wife, and so they were calling them the Mr. and Mrs. Spitfire, and that was really neat to see them displaying together. And I mean, there's nowhere else in the world you ever see a husband and wife displaying Spitfires together.
That is pretty unique.
And also, I need to say, too, congratulations to Liz, who went solo in the Mark 14 Spitfire just after the air show, too. That's a huge achievement. So now both Frank and Liz are able to fly the Griffin engine Spitfire.
Yeah, you got to love a Griffin.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, it's an amazing aircraft.
Yeah, what's it got, it's got five blade?
Yes, 5-blade prop. Huge engine, lovely sound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We had Steadfast here, as you mentioned, the Yak 3U, and we had that flying with the other Yak 3, Yak 3M, I think it is, that's based at Amaka, and both of those are actually ex-Reno racers, so that was cool to see them flying together with the Corsair and various other fighters as well. And again, we had the Fokker triplanes, 7 of those with the Fokker D7 flying together. So there's 8 Fokkers up together, and having a battle with the British World War One planes as well, which is great. And one of those I'd never seen before was the Snipe. I had seen one before, but I hadn't seen it in the air. So it was great to see the Snipe very beautifully displayed by Kermit Weeks. Man, that thing sounds nice. It's such a cool aircraft. And one of the highlights, too, I should mention, was the flyable V1 flying bomb. That was a huge highlight again. We had it in 2015. This time it's slightly more refined and just a crowd stopper again. Yeah. And, you know, it's remote control. It's like a big flying model, but it just really adds to the whole event. And we had the Black Falcons, the RNZF's new aerobatic display team in their T6 Texans. Awesome team. Really enjoying their new displays.
Oh, fantastic. Sounds like it's an incredible show. And it's like Omaka and is a big one for all the classics and so on. And same as Warbirds Down Under at Tamora. And hopefully I get to Omaka and hopefully I get to Warbirds Down Under next year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'd love to see you come across to Amaka. You'd love the show. It's probably the best show in New Zealand. That and Wanaka are alternate years, and they're the two big shows. So, and they attract a lot of people across from Australia, both of them, and you've got to come across and do the next DeMarco, because it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
We were so lucky to actually have the show happen. The weather leading up to it, we had this cyclone hit New Zealand, and lots of rain turned the place to a quagmire of mud. It was literally, with all the World War One fighters and the mud looking like the Somme, it was quite authentic looking. But the weather had actually closed the airport at Blenheim. It had stopped the ferry going across. And, of course, with the road out between Blenheim and Christchurch, with no main road, thanks to the Kaikoura earthquake a few months ago, there were a lot of people didn't actually make it to the air show, unfortunately, so it was a bit of a smaller crowd than usual, but it was so worth being there, because the weather cleared up perfectly for the Friday, which was the first day, and it was a brilliant show.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'm guessing that the guest you're about to bring on, Bevan, was there as well.
He was. He was in one of the Fokker triplanes, I caught up with him several times during the weekend, and it was really good to see him, and I guess we should wrap up the news and bring him on.
Cool. That'd be great. Yeah, I haven't caught up with Bevan since a number of Avalons, like many years ago when he was over with the T-Vale guys, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say when I pick up the recorded version of this, because I won't be able to listen in live, unfortunately.
Right. Okay, then. Well, hopefully we might have you live again soon in the future. But thanks very much for coming on.
Hey, no worries. Thanks for letting me come on, and have fun, everyone. I'm looking forward to being back on the live show in the near future.
Cool. Thanks, Grant.
Well, that was Grant, and we're back now live with Bevan. You still there, Bevan?
Yep, hello again.
Hello again, and welcome back to the show. And we were talking there about the recent Classic Fighters Air Show at Omaka, and of course you were flying one of the Fokker triplanes in the big formation and in the air battle, and that was your first experience of an air display with the World War One battle, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, Dave. The first time, or last time I flew at Classic Fighters, I just flew the 9-ship formation of the Fokkers that we did. This time I flew the formation and the air battle. It's a little bit more going on for the air battle. It gets quite exciting when you've got, I think we had about 8, or might have been 10 aeroplanes up at once, all doing our dogfight scenario. You don't realise about situational awareness until you have to try and keep an eye on 10 aeroplanes while you're circling around.
Of course, and they're all over the sky too, in different parts, so that for the crowd it looks quite spectacular. With you've got aircraft over the far side of the field, you've got aircraft close to you, you've got high, you've got low, and as those pilots like yourself who are in, you know, an aircraft like a DR1, where the forward visibility is not that great anyway, is it? And the downward visibility is not that great, is it? So it must be quite a challenge.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter where you look in a Fokker triplane, there really is always a wing in the way.
Yeah.
We managed to choreograph it, so it does make the sky look like it's full all the time. So the aeroplane, we have three sections of the sky that we split the aeroplanes into. So we have a section that's low and close to the crowd. So we normally have two or three airplanes down there having a little dogfight. And then we'll have middle distance out and somewhere between 400 to 700 feet. So there's another two or three or four airplanes in that section of the sky. And then the furthest away airplanes are up, generally around 800 to 1,000 feet. So when you look up through the aeroplanes, it looks like the sky is absolutely packed with aeroplanes.
It does.
We have a bit of a spacing between, so we can try and avoid having any mishaps.
Yep, exactly. And, of course, at the same time, for the crowd who are watching, there's also the ground battle going on between, reenactors pretending to be, both sides, and there's artillery and tanks and trucks and all sorts of things running up and down, and there's big explosions. So it's a real spectacle. It's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see it from the ground. I've seen it from the ground several times. To be able to look down through the whole fight at the ground fire and everything is pretty amazing as well. I was flying in the top section, so furthest away. I was up there with another triplane and the snipe. I got shot down by the snipe, of course, because I'm German. but looking down through the whole fight, down towards the ground fire and seeing all the explosion and flak and everything, it was pretty fantastic. But your head's always moving, always looking for the other aeroplane, so it's quite an amazing thing. And also have to remember that all of this is Nordo as well, no radios.
Yes.
So and so you just got to be really aware of what's going on, because often things don't quite go to the brief. So just have to anticipate what's going to happen next.
How cool does that feel to be able to say that you were shot down by Kermit Weeks in the snipe?
Well, I suppose there's not that many people that could say that.
No. I mean, it's pretty neat that you're getting to fly with, world-renowned pilots like that.
Oh, yeah, very, very, very lucky. Yeah, I can't even really say how lucky I am, really, to be able to do this stuff. It's, it's everything about it. It just kind of can't really put it into words. It's just unique and just very lucky to be able to do what I'm doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've been, as you said, you've been flying the Fokker DR1 triplane a fair bit, and that's got a radial engine, unlike the originals, which had the rotary engine. But you mentioned to me that recently you've also been doing a lot of ground running on rotary engines, and tell me about that, because that's quite a rare thing these days to have the ability to sit in an aircraft and run a rotary.
Yeah, so we're pretty lucky here. We've got, in the world there's somewhere between 25 and maybe 30 rotary engines running in the world. And I think we've got about 15 of them here.
Wow.
Seven different types of rotaries, which is, of course, most in the world. I've just started playing on the ground with our little Newport 11, which has got an original 80 horsepower Lorraine rotary in it. So it's one of the more docile rotary engines. So anyone that kind of knows a little bit about rotary engines will know that they don't have a conventional throttle system. So you've got an air lever and a fuel lever in the cockpit. So you control the mixture of the engine pretty much just by listening to it. So if it's running nicely, don't touch it. If it's not running, fiddle furiously.
But that sounds very much like a chipmunk, doesn't it? really, just sitting here listening to
that. Well, yes. Yeah, I suppose the chipping is good training. But when you are actually in the aeroplane and sitting there on the ground and they swing the prop and it roars into life, like the sound, the smell, everything, it's pretty overwhelming to start with. And it takes a moment just to settle down and listen to what's actually going on with the engine. The 80 Lorraine's pretty forgiving, so you can move the levers around quite a lot, and the thing won't stop on you. But if it sounds like it's kind of a bit muffly, generally it's a bit rich, and if it sounds quite a sharp exhaust tone, it's a bit lean, or if it backfires, it's a bit lean.
Okay. Is the starting process the same as starting a radio engine?
Not really. They're all kind of a bit finicky, really. There's out of the seven different types they've got, they've all got different starting procedures. Okay. So we, the 80 Lorraine, we spin it over fairly fast on the ground just by hand, and the pilot has the fuel lever about halfway open, and while it's being spun around, you pump the air and it sucks the fuel up into the engine.
Okay.
So the 80 Lorraine's fairly throttleable, so you can throttle it back to about 600 RPM, and then the maximum RPM is about 1200, or else they the centripetal force tends to pull them apart, and that's never good. But an aeroplane like the Sopwith Camel, that's kind of the most famous airplane that's just got a fuel lever, so the air is constant, so it's full throttle or nothing. And the easiest way to kind of put it into perspective is driving through town with your foot to the boards and using the key to control your speed.
Yeah, that's pretty good analogy there. And you can certainly hear it. When it takes off, it sounds like a normal aircraft taking off, and then suddenly the engine's just dead for a bit, isn't it, while he starts to level out.
Yeah. So you got the little button on the stick to cut the ignition, but don't cut it for too long because the fuel and oil is still going into the engine, firing out the exhaust. And if you hold it in for too long, it'll either not run, or if it does run, you're lucky, or it could catch on fire as well. So you have to be a little bit careful.
Jeez, so you really need to
find out about that.
you really need to have your wits about you, sort of operating these things, and you'd have to be a pretty experienced pilot to want to jump into one of these.
Could you imagine in the war? It's like that. Often it would have been the first thing you would have jumped into is something like an Avro 504 with a rotary engine, and then with not much flying experience, jump into something like a SUP with Camel. You can barely keep the engine running. You can barely fly an airplane, and you're expected to go to combat.
Wow. It's kind of sobering to think of it that way.
Yeah, so I think we're a little bit luckier now.
Yes, yeah, definitely. You mentioned that more people were killed in training on the SUP with Camel than in combat. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that was mainly due to the gyroscopic effect of the engine. Once you start getting into the bigger rotaries, the gyroscopic forces on the airplane are pretty significant. So when you want to turn the airplane to the right, the airplane wants to descend. So the pilots are warned not to turn right after takeoff, because generally when you did that at low speed, the airplane would just roll over and roll into the ground. So always turn left after takeoff. But that could also be used to your advantage in a dogfight as well. Either spiral down to the right or climb up to the left.
Yep.
To get away from your opponent.
Yeah.
That's still a lot to learn.
Yeah, I'll bet. You've got a trip coming up in July off to England and America, aren't you?
Yeah, so I head off to the UK on the 26th of June. And then, so I'm there for 3.5 weeks. Doing a variety of air shows, a couple of Shuttleworth air shows, and then Flying Legends, REAT, and then off to America on the 22nd of July. So I fly into Seattle. We're going to see Paul Allen's collection and the Skyfair show that he's having there for the weekend, I think it's a Sunday, and then straight to Oshkosh, and then down to Chino before I come home.
Now, when you were in England 2 years ago, you did a bit of flying over there in a BE2. Are you going to be doing any flying this time? Have you got anything lined up?
No, I haven't really got any flying lined up this time. The BE2s have been changed from the New Zealand register over to the British register now, so I have to have a UK license to fly them, which is a bit unfortunate.
Right.
And it's I don't think it's going to be worth doing that this time for my short stay.
Right, yeah.
So I have to plan that a bit better next time, maybe. But
Devin, yeah, I have a question for you.
Such a great time, and was so lucky last time that.
Let's ask Bevan this too. I'd be happy. Who are you visiting with in Chino? Do you have? Is this just you and a friend coming over, or who are you planning to see?
Yes, coming over with a friend of mine from the UK. Kieran. So I'm not too sure what I'm going to be doing at Chino yet, but I think Kieran knows Steve-O Hinton briefly, so we're going to try and meet up with him, but it's a bit uncertain yet. We just want to see what's going on around the place, really.
That's wonderful.
And, of course, when you go to see Paul Allen's collection, you'll catch up with the Mosquito that was recently restored here in New Zealand as well. That's going to be quite a thrill.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing that, especially in its new scheme. It looks pretty fantastic in the photos, but I can't wait to see it in real life.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and they'll actually have it flying, hopefully, so it hasn't flown there yet, has it?
No, it hasn't. I think they're planning on flying that, the Hellcat, the Storch, and a couple of other things I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay,
cool. So it should be fantastic.
So I guess, you know, traveling around the air shows over in Britain and in America, you're I hope to catch up with a few interesting people over there. If there's anyone out there listening that might be able to, I don't know, give Bevan some opportunities, that'd be pretty neat, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be fantastic. Yeah, I'm just going to really try and catch up with some friends that I met last time, and just always trying to get build connections and get to know people.
Absolutely.
You just never know.
Yeah, absolutely. How's your chipmunk going?
Well, it's not really going at the moment. I haven't flown it for nearly 3 months now. It's out of the air getting new pistons and rings and a top overhaul. So hopefully by the time I get back from the UK and America, I should be able to be flying that again. I'm really looking forward to it, starting to get a few withdrawals.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, and of course you haven't been able to fly the Tiger Moth recently either, because the one that you used to fly had an accident. So not with you in it, but I know that you do a lot of flights with other young aspiring pilots and get them up into the tail draggers. So I think that's a really admirable thing.
Yeah, I really tried pretty hard with the Tiger to encourage some of my other friends and some other young people to get into it. So I was doing quite a bit of training with other pilots from just local aero clubs and things, just trying to expose them to this sort of flying, as most people don't really get the opportunity to get to fly this sort of open cockpit old aeroplanes. So I was just trying to really get the opportunities out there. I guess the more young people that I can encourage, then hopefully there'll be more for the future.
Absolutely.
So it's just not the opportunities unless you're either incredibly rich or know the right people to get into this sort of aviation. But it is actually quite achievable if you're given the opportunity.
That's brilliant, isn't it, Matt?
It is brilliant. I'm writing someone as we speak to say, hey, meet Bevan.
So, oh, brilliant.
Yeah, he's coming your way. So,
I think it's
terrific. So I really do. And I hope you just have a grand adventure. It pains me to no end that this grand adventure we're going on this summer happens to be right in the middle of Oshkosh. So it's just killing me to have to miss this. With you. So,
there'll be another opportunity.
I hope. I really do. I think you're going to, I'm afraid you're going to come over here, Bevan, and you're just going to see all of this fun stuff and have to figure out how to co-locate yourself at some point.
I know I need more of me. It's going to be like, yeah, everywhere in the world is just, well, so far is just trying to need one piece of me in England, piece in Australia, all over the place, really.
Oh, that's wonderful, though. Well, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for you. How old are you now, Bevan?
23.
Isn't that great, Dave?
It
23.
I mean, most people at 23 haven't achieved even PPL or anything like that in aviation. So, the things that you're doing, Bevan, it's pretty remarkable.
It really is. I think it's
very, very lucky.
So Seafair, Paul Allen's collection is incredible. There's a couple of other people that I think you should run into while you're out there, if you have the time. And that one of those is John Sessions' collection out there.
Yeah,
which is just
I
terrific.
Met John when I was in England 2 years ago when he had his Spitfire over there for the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Britain stuff. So hopefully I'll be able to catch up with him again.
Well, and the Ericsson collection is there too. I mean, there's just so many wonderful people that would enjoy meeting you, Bevan. I think are you bringing honey over with you? You could bribe them with honey and say,
everyone has said that to me so far.
Yes,
I'm not quite sure.
A little.
Not quite sure how I'll get on importing all that honey.
Now we've been talking about this, but you really are you are a beekeeper, and your business is it Manuka? Is that how you say it? Manuka honey?
Yeah, Manuka honey. So
doesn't sound as cool when I say it, but
So it's a big, big export for New Zealand at the moment, mainly for the health benefits of the honey.
It cures bird flu, AIDS, cancer, baldness, which I didn't realize, but all kind of things, doesn't it? It's like a miracle drug.
It's pretty amazing stuff. It's kind of like a superfood, I guess you could say. But it also works well if you stick it on a plaster and stick it on a wound. Antiseptic and antibacterial properties are pretty amazing.
So in your survival kit on the chipmunk, it's just a big thing of Manuka honey, right? That's all it is. Just wipe it on. Don't worry. Put some honey on it. You're like just rubbing it in. I love it.
Yeah, so that hopefully pays the aviation bills, although it's been a bit of a terrible season this year. So.
Oh, you're telling me about it. We were talking offline, and I've got cylinders here and sleeves in the trunk, and we have them everywhere. We have parts everywhere. It's a gypsy major farm right now.
Well, that's plenty worse things to have.
Yeah, well, it goes together fast, though. If you know, when you start putting it back together, it really does. It goes together very quickly.
Yeah. Lucky that they're fairly easy to work on engines.
It's like a tractor, right? We need to get Dave in an airplane. Dave, any chance we'll ever get you flying, Dave?
As in learning to fly. Don't know.
Yeah, I think it
always
needs to happen.
I always like going up in airplanes, but
we'll have to try out sometime.
Bevan, I have a question for you about your chipmunk. Let me dive in just for a second with Bevan here, Dave, because I'm very curious about this. When you're doing acro in your chipmunk, I may have asked you this, what RPM are you at? You've seen in all the videos.
Not using any more than 2,100.
2,100?
Yeah.
That's like takeoff power.
So you just try not to use. Well, I'd never let it ever go over 21.
Never let it go over 2,000.
Not even in the dives or anything. I always try and keep it back to that.
So you're way back on the throttle.
Yeah. Try and go with the energy management, really.
So after flying a Sopwith or something like that, yeah, no problem. All right, I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing, but...
Anyway. Come on, Matt, tell us.
Oh, it's like 2,300 all the way.
Yeah.
It just, you know, which is fine on the engine. I mean, it's fine, but I think rebuild is like 2,675, and I've never seen that, but... I don't know how they got, which brings me to the question, it makes you wonder how they reached V&E, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. I think that was the limiting factor on the chip, as I was reading in one of the books. I think they dived them up to 270 miles an hour.
I know, it's insane.
The flight testing.
Yeah, it's insane.
The limiting factor was overspeeding the engine.
Yeah, which they didn't care about. They just said, exactly. We have lots of them. We don't care. But it just makes you wonder, you know, how they did that. So your injury speed... On a roll is what? 100, 110, something around there?
Yeah, on an aileron roll, 110, something like that.
You do it at 90 or so, it doesn't matter. But
Yeah, exactly. But try and keep a bit of energy up, especially when you're down low.
And what about a loop?
Doing loop 120. So that's normally, I can easily do that with 2,100.
So you just dive down... Get up to 120 with the throttle way back.
Yeah.
And then just pull like hell.
The full power as you go through the vertical, and then coming back down the other side, bring the power back again.
Yeah, bring it back down again when you get over the top. Yeah. Float it over the top and bring it back down. I'm always hesitant on that throttle because when you fly these chipmunks, as Bevan will tell you, Dave, that gypsy major seems to just barks constantly if you do it wrong. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I avoid a loop in my airplane. I call it a Ted Cruz. It's a half Cuban, a little to the right. So you just bank a little to the right, pull, and roll out.
Yeah. So
very low.
My routine normally, I come from behind the crowd at about 1,300 feet or so, dive down once I'm in front of the crowd, pull up into a loop. And then 90 degree on the way out, 90 degree turn into the wind, and then Cuban 8, and then start just the rest of my routine from there, which generally is just kind of loops and rolls and passes and barrel rolls and all that sort of stuff. Nothing too extravagant.
You know, the late Bobby Yomkin used to say, great air show pilot, wonderful air show pilot and entertainer, used to say, go up, do what you do well once, and then land.
Yeah.
And in a chipmunk, that'd be about... be about 3 minutes worth of air show flying because there's just not much you can do with a stock chipmunk, is there?
No, there's not. And if you try and pretend to be a fighter, you'll never achieve. So you just have to fly it for what it is.
Which is a wonderful airplane.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the best. Absolutely.
Do you ever get an opportunity to do any aerobatics, or does anyone in the team get an opportunity to do aerobatics in the World War One aircraft, or is it just strictly prohibited?
No aerobatics in the World War One airplanes. They used to do a little bit of aerobatics way, way, way back in the day when the collection first started, but that an end came to that pretty quick. We do pretty spirited displays, but we don't go upside down.
No Immelmann turns.
Especially in the triplanes and things. They are. You can air about them. We don't.
Safety first.
Yeah, and preserving the airplanes.
Yeah, absolutely. I just remembered too, changing the subject slightly here. When I came back from the news, I was going to say there was a bit of late breaking news that's happened since Grant and I recorded that, and it's pretty neat. The KI-61 Tony that has been over at Wangaratta in Australia is on its way to Ardmore at Auckland in New Zealand to AVSPECs to be restored. This is Jerry Yagan's KI-61 Tony. So it's the team that have restored two Mosquitoes recently, and they're working on their third Mosquito, and they're now getting the Tony. How cool was that?
Oh, can't wait to see that fly.
Me too.
Bends is going to be, just fantastic. It's going to absolutely bark against our airplanes, that's for sure.
I saw that they had their flak gun out at their event this weekend. I don't know if you saw that, Dave.
I did.
Big German flak gun out banging away in the Virginia countryside. So.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty neat.
We had some kind of big gun at the air show I was at this weekend where they flew it in on a big Chinook helicopter. They didn't fire it, though. And sort of jokingly with the guardsmen that were there, I said, next year we ought to fire that thing. And they looked at me as only a Rhode Island guardsman can do. And they said, well, we tried, but we couldn't find any dummy rounds for it. But we're working on it for next year. I mean, it was this massive gun. It was much larger than a howitzer. I mean, it was huge. It was probably 30, 40 feet long. I mean, really a big gun. Very big gun.
Who needs dummy rounds, though? Surely there must be something you can fire it.
Well, the problem is it's on a point right there by Martha's Vineyard along the East Coast. And there would be several hundred boats right off the coast of the airport. So shelling onto the yachts would not be a good thing.
Lucky shot.
Yeah, exactly. Would not be a good thing. They were mad enough at the F-18 who found them right off the end of the runway. And
there may well be several hundred broken windows as well.
Yeah, that's, part of it, right? So, good fun.
So, Bevan, is there anything in the collection, the Vintage Aviator collection, that you'd really like to get into and have a fly of in the future?
Yes, everything, really. But
everything.
I'm pretty happy to be flying what I am at the moment, and if I get the opportunity to fly more airplanes, then we'll take that as it comes. But yeah, any of the airplanes would be fantastic. I do particularly like the Sopwith Pup, or the RE8. That really kind of appeal to me.
Awesome.
Whatever you're in at the time really is your favourite. So. And
cool.
To have the opportunity to fly these was pretty amazing. So,
Definitely. Of course, the Vintage Aviator collection displays at some of the big air shows like Wings Over Wire Rapper and Classic Fighters at Omaka and shows like that. But they also have their own little shows through the summer, once a month sort of thing. And hopefully that'll continue again next year.
Yeah, I think that is the plan. We'll try and continue them for next season, especially with it being the centenary of the final year of the war. Last weekend of each month during the summer, so November through to April, we fly the airplanes. So we'll generally pull everything out and fly it if we can, weather dependent. So we'll just fly whenever the weather's good and go out and do some dogfights or formation flying or just whatever we can, judging by the weather. So we're pretty lucky in that respect. We'll fly whatever we can, whenever we can, yep. over the weekend. If you're at like Classic Fighters or any of those air shows and you see our World War One stuff flying, you haven't really seen the vintage aviator at that point. You have to come to Masterton and see all of the weird and wonderful unique aeroplanes like the FE-2B or our original Bristol Fighter,
yep.
or any of those aeroplanes. We don't take them anywhere else, mainly right. because they are so fragile and unique. We don't want to risk them. So
absolutely.
You have to come to Masterton to see them.
Bevan, if I could ask one question that everybody's always curious about. Are the rumors of Lancasters true?
I would have no idea.
Uh-oh. Okay. Okay.
That's funny. The stories that people come to me with, I'm like, I have no idea. I know what's in the hangar, and that's about it.
That's great, though. What an opportunity for you. What a great opportunity.
So it's not true that you've been cast as Guy Gibson, then?
I wish, but no.
That's great.
Hopefully the Dam Busters will go ahead. I don't know what the plan is with that. That's a bit above my pay grade.
Yeah.
Well, keep your head down and keep doing great work, Bevan.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you very much for coming on today. I know that you're busy down there in Masterton, and you've got things going on with both your beekeeping and with the collection at the moment. So it's been great to have you on.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave and Matt. It's been an absolute pleasure again. I hope to be on again sometime soon.
Yeah, maybe we could get you to record some stuff while you're overseas and.
That's a good point. Report back on the big after the big adventure.
Absolutely, yeah, that'd be brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Bevan. It's been a great show. Cheers.
Thanks,
Bevan. Good night, Dave. Good night.
Good night.